Blog Talk Radio.
Well, happy St. Paddy's Day, the 17th of March, and St. Paddy's Day show for you here. St. Patrick was the, or is the saint, patron saint of Ireland, of course, and so it's a big holiday, especially over in the United States. And what we know about St. Patrick, the basic themes of his life, he was born in the 300s in the 4th century, and was in Britain, and some people say Scotland, other people say Wales, and he was taken captive at some point and brought to Ireland, and then forced to be a shepherd over there, and was able to escape by way of a dream. He was revealed to him, according to his biography, autobiography, that he was to go to walk across Ireland and go to a port where a ship would be waiting for him, and he got on the ship. And so anyway, he ended up leaving Ireland and later became a priest too. And he was kidnapped, I think he was 16, and he was in Ireland for 6 years, and then he went away to be trained and came back to Ireland to work as a priest in the church, in the Catholic Church, at a time when Catholicism would have been much different than it is today in terms of some of the doctrines. But anyway, that is the foundation of Ireland, Irish law. And I did my thesis in college on ancient Irish law they call Brehon law, and the history of Brehon law is traced back to St. Patrick, in that he had adapted Irish law, Brehon law, the law of the Druids and the Celts, he adapted it to Christianity. So it was a big deal, you know. They say that he kicked the snakes out of Ireland. That is symbolic for the idea that he kicked out the pagans. Well, he really, St. Patrick converted the pagan chieftains to, it was tribal society to Christianity. And by the time he died, I think that pretty much the island had been totally converted to Christianity. Where it is today, still a Christian, Protestant, and Catholic nation. Let me do a few headlines for you before we dive into this. Health bill passes committee by one vote. And there's going to be a lot of fighting. They say that it can't make it in the Senate, so it's going to undoubtedly be sent back to the House. Angela Merkel coming to see Donald Trump at the White House. You know, these anti-Trump people are so deranged, it's kind of hilarious. Instead of getting up and insulting the president 50 different ways and 7 ways from Sunday, people should just stand up and say, I am a liberal and therefore I oppose Donald Trump. It's nonsensical, a lot of the things that the people say about him. Paul Auster, who's a famous surrealist novelist. Well, not really that famous if I have to explain who he is. Paul Auster, Donald Trump is deranged and demented. Okay. In other words, you're a liberal. All right, some more stories here. To go into Google News. Tillerson, military action against North Korea is on the table. Debate over and battling over the budget of Donald Trump. Disputing whether there was any wiretapping, according to the New York Times and Washington Post, although the New York Times did run a story about it. CNN, Donald Trump's words are catching up to his presidency. This, you know, one after another stories in mainstream media against Donald Trump. I just don't see it getting any better for the mainstream media. I'm looking for big news that you would really, there's really not a ton of stuff going on. Okay, so let me here's a little background on St. Patty. So I'm sure I told this on the show before, but I lived with a guy from the Midlands in Britain, in England, probably for about a year. His name was Marcus, which was convenient because he was a Marxist, but his father, and this is a very typical Irish story. People born in Ireland going to other places because the Irish economy is so poor. But his dad taught him when he was a kid that St. Paddy's Day was a national day of disgrace in Ireland. And it's really true. The people that you see lying on the ground in their own vomit, that type of thing. I mean, people drink in Ireland, but on St. Paddy's Day, it's just over the top of anything you've ever seen. All right, here is a little bit from CBN on St. Patty.
It was an act of defiance that changed the course of a nation. Patrick lit a fire in pagan 5th century Ireland, ushering Christianity into the country. But who was this man who became the patron saint of Ireland? Ireland was a beautiful island shrouded in terrible darkness. Warlords and druids ruled the land. But across the sea in Britain, a teenager was poised to bring this nation to God.
Well, Patrick was raised in a Christian family. His father was a deacon. His grandfather was a priest. But Patrick says that from an early age, he really didn't have any serious interest in religion, and that he was practically an atheist when he was a teenager.
Around 400 A.D., Patrick was abducted from his village and thrown onto a slave ship headed for Ireland.
And he saw that as God chastising him, first of all. That was his first view. He says, we deserved what we got. We were carried off at 16 years of age over to this foreign land.
Patrick was sold to a chieftain named Milchu. He spent 6 years tending his master's flocks on the slopes of the mountains of Ireland. Patrick recounts his time as a slave in his memoir entitled The Confession.
And he says, I prayed 100 times in the day and almost as many at night. And through that experience of prayer and trial, he came to know another God, God the Father, who was his protector. He came to know Jesus Christ in those sufferings, and he came to be united with Christ, and he came to identify with Christ. And then, of course, he also the Holy Spirit.
One night during a time of prayer and fasting, Patrick wrote, I heard in my sleep a voice saying to me, it is well that you fast. Soon you will go to your own country. And again, after a short while, I heard a voice saying to me, see, your ship is ready. Patrick escaped and traveled 200 miles cross country to the coast. He found a ship ready to sail, but was refused passage. After a desperate prayer, he was allowed aboard. Patrick returned to his home and family. His experience of God's grace and provision solidified his faith, and he began to study for the ministry.
One night he had a dream. There was a man who came from Ireland with a whole bunch of letters, and he opened up one of the letters, and it said across it, the voice of the Irish. And then he heard a voice coming out of this letter that said, holy boy, please return to us. We need you.
Patrick struggled in his soul. Could he return to Ireland and minister to the same people who had enslaved him? Once again, he turned to God in prayer. He received the answer in a dream.
He talks about how he, in this dream, is trying to pray, and yet he can't. And so that he hears a voice coming from inside of him, which he realizes is the voice of God praying for him.
Patrick knew he had to go and convinced his church that he was called to be a missionary to Ireland. He set sail in a small ship. Patrick landed here at the mouth of the Slaney River. When Patrick set foot on this shore, a new era dawned on this island.
It was an island of tribalism, an island of war, an island of suspicion, an island of violence and death. Here he came as a virtual stranger to this country of warring factions.
They worship multiple gods of the sky and the earth and the water. And so that was his first challenge, was to convince the Irish that there was just one God and that this God really did love them.
Patrick came face to face with tribal chieftains and their Druid priests. The showdown came on the morning of his first Easter in Ireland.
Part of the pagan worship was that a fire was lit. And first of all, the fire on the Hill of Tara, and no other lights all in Ireland.
This monastery on the Hill of Slane is where Patrick, in direct defiance of the High King of Tara, lit a forbidden fire.
He was summoned before the king, and he explained that he wasn't a threat really, because he was bringing the new light, the light of Christ, the Savior of the world, the light of the world.
The first light of Easter Day was dawning. Patrick brought the hope of Easter Day to Ireland.
The weather can be absolutely brutal here in Ireland, but just imagine what it must have been like for Patrick in the 5th century as he trekked across the countryside, bringing the gospel to the pagan Celts.
People sometimes made fun of him because he said that God often gave him a message that there was danger ahead. But he said, you know, laugh at me if you will. This is something that has protected me in Ireland.
Listen to Patrick's poem of faith and trust in God, The Breastplate.
Christ be with me, Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ to win me, Christ to comfort and restore me, Christ beneath me, Christ above me, Christ in quiet, Christ in danger, Christ in hearts of all that love me, Christ in mouth of friend, a stranger.
Myths and legends have grown up around this hero of Ireland.
The very central teaching was the Trinity. And then how does one explain three persons and one God? And then the story, Patrick took the shamrock and showed, you have three leaves on this.
One of the famous legends, of course, is that Patrick drove all the snakes out of Ireland.
In fact, any snakes in Ireland had disappeared during the Ice Age.
The legend about the driving of the snakes may in fact really symbolize the driving out of evil.
This is St. Patrick's Memorial Church in Saul. In 432 AD, Patrick built a church on this site. It was the first Christian church ever built in all of Ireland.
Preaching the gospel, of course, baptizing converts, appointing clergy.
Patrick's ministry lasted 29 years. He baptized over 120,000 Irish and planted 300 churches.
What Patrick did was really lay the groundwork for Christianity.
This memorial stone marks the final resting place of Patrick. Now, it's not really known exactly where he was buried, but they believe it's somewhere beneath the church on this hill, Down Cathedral.
He was a man who came to face and help his former enemies who had enslaved him. He came back to help them and to do them a great favor, the greatest favor he possibly could.
I honestly feel that what Patrick taught Ireland was, there is a cost to discipleship, but it's a cost that Christ will help you to pay.
That last guy, and I can't remember what his name is, but I lived in Galway, Ireland, and this guy was a priest there, but he had been involved in some affair with some American woman. Try to remember his name, but it was very, very scandalous. Until very recently, the Catholic Church was so powerful in Ireland, it was totally unchallenged, really, in the South. In the North, you've got Northern Ireland, and the Northern Ireland is considered to be the most Protestant nation on the earth, so it's very interesting. All right, here is a song called Be Thou My Vision, which is an ancient Irish hymn, one of the oldest hymns known. And I'm trying to remember who they think wrote this, if it was Patrick or not. But anyway, here's a little bit of this. This is Van Morrison with the Chieftains. If you ever want to get an album that really represents classic Irish folk songs done in a very beautiful way, Van Morrison's Irish Heartbeat, unsurpassed. 622 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Be right back.
Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Not be all else to me, save at thy heart. Thou my best thought in the day and the night. Waking or sleeping, thy presence, my life.
I get a few, happy St. Patty's Day, Kelly. Betcha you got an F in that thesis. Frankie, your bitterness is so attractive. You know what? I should do a part of a show on the thesis. It was pretty interesting. I never published it, but it was very, very illuminating. So, Frankie, I think you need to take, speaking of which, you need to take a trip and get this anti-Trump bile out of your mouth. I think we need a prayer circle. You know what? Well, they talk about one of the things they do in the church over in Ireland is have novenas. like 9 days of prayer. I think we need 9 days of prayer for Frankie, that the spirit of bitterness, the anti-Trump demon would be allowed to escape him. Yeah, sitting in bed, laying in bed all day and drinking is no way to, it's no life, Frankie. The number one whiskey I saw in Ireland was not Jameson's. It was Paddy's. P-A-D-D-Y-S. Not terribly sophisticated, but cheap. And I was trying to remember the name of the stores. They've got this chain of stores all over the place. So Ireland is kind of a combination of the old and the new, you know, all these old towns, but the architecture is very simple over there. A lot of stone used. The buildings don't have a lot of adornments on them, so you don't even see that. The windows don't even have, they don't even have things, a shade coming out to cover them. Okay, we got a message here. Is Frankie going to break Starbucks windows to celebrate Trump's win? yeah, Frankie, what are you? Are you going to be one of these people that ends up getting locked up for threatening the president? And I've been seeing this is a theme that is repeated over and over again, this idea that there's this kind of crazy thing. I'm a liberal, and I, you know, I'm opposed to Trump or whatever the hate du jour is. And I just amazing at how many people are putting themselves out there, famous people, journalists. The one thing that you have as a journalist is obviously the sense that you would get up and be a truth teller. And if you're getting up and advocating for your belief system, which I'm sure is very enjoyable, at the same time, it seems like it would kind of impact your market value. So do you guys want to talk more about Ireland or in St. Paddy, or it is kind of interesting what Ireland is like is a very green island with no trees. The story is that the British Navy came over and cut down the forest for part of their 600 ship Navy. Ireland was covered at one point with oak trees, and they haven't really reforested it, but There's a lot of rocks. There's a lot of grass. You know, there are some forests. There's these interesting islands that coast. And these islands, they still speak Gaelic out there. These guys are real Gaelic speakers. And if they come from these islands, and the islands were really off the coast of where I was at, Aran Island and all that, which is a funny name for it, because Aran means island, so island. But there were four or five of these islands out there. And looking for a little, there's Inishmore, which I think is the bigger one, but they've got this, if you want to talk about rocks, incredible number of rocks out on these islands. And there was, they had some ancient fort that they figured was like 10,000 years old that was built up on this bluff. Let me see if I can find something for it. Let's take a break. See if I can find something on the Aran Islands for you. And let me get another song for you here. Carrick Fergus is a real nice one. Carrick Fergus is a beautiful, beautiful song. I mean, some of these Irish folk songs are just, you know, put a tear in your eye, some of them. Carrick Fergus is a town outside of Belfast. And so by the time I left there were four or five different accents that I could detect, one of which would be obviously Dublin. And the Dublin accent you know, somebody's from Dublin, instead of saying thanks, they say tanks. So they get rid of the H, tanks a lot. All right, here is a little Carrick Ferguson. We'll get some local news for you. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back.
I wish I had you in Carrick E. Ferguson. Only 4 nights in Ballygran. I would swim over the deepest ocean. The deepest ocean to be by your side. But the sea is wide, and I can't swim over, and neither have I wings to fly.
Hey, 6:37, St. Paddy's Day. So, happy Friday. You know, one of the interesting things is there is no such thing as some of the meals that we have over here in America that we celebrate. Corned beef is unheard of in Ireland, and some other things too. I mean, I can't remember. I don't think they drink green beer over there, things like that. So anyway, I'm looking for something from the Aran Islands, but I still got to keep looking for it. Anyway, so it just, if you're interested, Ireland, to drive from the top to the bottom would probably be, I don't know, the roads are not great over there. So if you drove from the south to the north, top to bottom, you could probably do it in 6 hours, believe it or not. And Dublin to Galway from one coast to another is probably an hour. So, or it's probably 100 miles. So an hour and a half, 2 hours. And sometimes the roads are very tight. Sometimes the vehicles come very close to one another. And I was in a car one time and we came so close with the car on the other side of the road because this lady had this what they call a pram or a baby buggy out in the road. And one of the things that happens in Ireland is that people are much more aware, pedestrians, because there's a lot more pedestrian traffic, number one. Number two, there's a law there that if you hit a pedestrian, it's your fault. I mean, basically. So people, you know, they're a lot more careful. So there's a lady standing in the road with her baby buggy talking to some other woman. So we went around her. There was a car on the other side. And we actually hit mirrors, side mirrors. So, and I was with my friend Billy. So let's see here. Let's get into, I guess, a little bit more news. I don't know if you've noticed, I'm sure I've mentioned this 3,000 times, but, you know, Glenn Beck has really gone off the deep end. He's apologizing to Obama and doesn't care if he has any Trump fans. I mean, I don't know what the guy really stands for, but it doesn't really appear to be the traditional conservative movement. And Let me get my notes here, but yeah. So anyway, so what's your prediction for Trump? his future other than Frankie. You can stay in bed, Frankie. You don't have to get up for this one. But how successful he's going to be, and they're putting up articles now that are asking him to reach across the aisle. Now, we've got this story out of Venezuela that I think that you would find notable. Inflation has jumped to 741%, and they're starting to call it a prison state because, you know, it's kind of like North Korea. All the people are trapped in there. All the people trapped inside of Venezuela. Venezuela has, all right, so here is, I would say, a great argument against socialism, because socialism should flourish in a place where a country has more of a very valuable resource than any other, because even if you don't have a functional economy, you can take this product, in this case oil, the world's largest oil reserves, which are now supposedly in America given to fracking, but Venezuela has something like 168 billion barrels of oil. You run that particular sector of the economy into the ground, and then it just so happens that a world oil slump in the prices occur. And so, but you know, if you want to look at Venezuela as like a terrarium full of, you know, bugs or little animals or whatever, and, you know, this is an experiment, but it's pretty sad that they had one of the most thriving economies in South America and a booming middle class. And now all of that has collapsed, and, you know, they eat their pets there. You know, they broke into the zoo so that they could have some meat. And so what is it about socialism that's so special that it's important to the spirit of the universe or God or whatever, that people have to be under this law in which they, you know, these socialists. So socialism doesn't work. Why can't all the nuts in this country take a look at this experiment number 3000 in socialism, and then the next failed attempt? Why can't these people just draw the obvious conclusion, huh? Socialism doesn't work. Is that so hard to say? Here we go. Here's a little bit from John Stossel, March 7th, socialism in Venezuela. In other words, starving without any good clothing and running on limited amounts of electricity in Venezuela. Oh, and you know what? When you have a socialist country, the military is involved in the economy because they're the ones that are passing everything out and they're stealing it. And then that's the only thing that booms in a socialist country is the black market and disease and death. Here we go. John Stossel.
A few countries voted for what they call social justice. Venezuela did, and Hollywood applauded. Danny Glover, Oliver Stone, Sean Penn, and Harry Belafonte all praised the new socialist leader, Hugo Chavez. Chavez has now died, but his picture is still on walls everywhere, and one of his flunkies, Nicolas Maduro, now presides over Venezuela's socialist revolution. Although today, some of the people who voted for it are mad that they didn't get all the goodies that they were supposed to get. And others are mad because since Chavez took over, Venezuela's economy has been in the tank. The news site, the Pan Am Post, covers Latin America and its experiments with social justice. Its editor is Fergus Hodgson. So what's going on?
People are living through a nightmare of socialism. It's been we're seeing the outcomes now, but it's been building for more than 10 years. There is a wave of corruption, crime, inflation. The people are leaving in droves. So
but why does that have to go with socialism? It's just we're supposed to share everything.
They have ruined incentives to be productive. They've violated property rights. They've confiscated property. So they have taken away the incentive for companies to be there. So if you can't keep the fruits of your labor, what incentive is there to build a productive economy?
So this country that makes – it's an oil-rich country. They make almost $100 billion a year selling oil. They're still poor.
You have, yeah, you have a tsunami of corruption in and out of the country, and you also have a whole array of failed social programs.
I also spend money in these pictures of Chavez all over. People have his picture tattooed on their bodies.
Right. So this is one of the most bizarre elements.
They get that free. That's also subsidized
by
the government.
Yes. So there are state-sponsored events where you can go and get a free tattoo of Chavez's signature, and they have painted Chavez's eyes, just like 1984, having Big Brother's eyes looking at you. It is just creepy.
Well, it creeps me out, but people there seem to like him. And leftists all over say, this is going to work. The Guardian newspaper, leftist newspaper in Britain, no one can explain why a rich country has no food.
That's just, but you just, you know, that's just a crazy statement, right? So no one can explain it. There are economists all over the place explaining it. People in Venezuela, people outside.
Once it became clear that Chavez's 21st century socialism wasn't exactly working out as hoped, and Venezuelans were protesting and rioting, I thought American leftists would at least be embarrassed by their early enthusiasm. But no, I think they're immune to embarrassment. After the tyrant Chavez died, Washington Post leftist Eugene Robinson found all kinds of nice things to say about it.
He could act like a buffoon, but he was very smart and obviously tenacious and determined. Was he a tyrant? You should remember he was democratically elected. Why did he have popular support? Because for many decades, the poor of Venezuela had been ignored. He provided medical attention that the poor of Venezuela hadn't received.
Let me tell you one thing. They don't even have they don't have bandages. They don't have any antibiotics. People are dying there from simple infections. They don't have the thread for sutures or the needles. The most basic things in Venezuela. So I would say to Billy Garrett, Billy, I realize you listen to the show every day because I'm so complimentary, but what does it take? I mean, if you think that you're a smart person and you support some level of socialism, and it's all, you know, what is it about socialism that always is the mother? Socialism becomes the mother of every human suffering. What is it about it? But I mean, what I'd like to know is all of these people who claim to be so brilliant, how is it that you can't look at what is happening right in front of you and draw the conclusion that it doesn't work? Why does socialism have to work? Why does it have to be tried and applied for you to have a good day? I don't get that. I mean, why would you want to take people's freedom away through the government and enslave them under some level of, you know? All right, we'll take a break here. 6:49, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And 805-6180 will be right. Be St. Patty's Day.
Bring back sad reflections to a happy time spent so long ago.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. This is your friend, Bob.
Bob, what's going on?
Well, I went to magistrate court. It only cost $77. You go to federal court, it's going to cost you over $400. So magistrate is charging too much. Not enough money. Like about $800. I mean, they should charge at least $100 to file that. And let's see. I want to thank you for making my day yesterday. It was great. And I think very much highly of you. And many people love you, Kelly, okay, and including me. So I want you to keep on doing what you're doing because you're doing a great job.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate that. And I hope that when you go to the fridge in the middle of the night that you don't step on a dead skunk.
No, hey, and by the way, a dollar? Did you say a dollar? I'd rather work at Walmart than get paid just a dollar to pick a roadkill.
Well, you got to raise your prices.
Well, you know, like I said, I go work for Walmart, then I can do both. How about that?
That sounds good. All right, Bob, happy St. Patty's Day.
Same to you, sir. God, that's great.
Thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye. All right, I did find a little clip. I mean, you can't really appreciate. You got to go on YouTube and look for. You get some looks for some clips on there, and just look up Ireland or look up the Aran Islands. It's A-R-A, and you got to see these things. I mean, they're just incredible. So, you know, weird things on Aran Island is they have so many stones that they basically made a whole bunch of walls with them, and so it in connected to one another with nothing inside, which sounds bizarre, but I mean it was a way to get the stones out of the way. And here's a strange story. My sister-in-law came, my brother and sister-in-law and their kid, and my mom came to visit me when I was in Ireland, and we went over the Aran Islands, and my sister ended up getting into a fight with a farmer who came over to scream at her for getting into one of these, you know, trying to cross the land. And she ended up having to shove him out of the way. But here's just a little bit on the West Coast, the Gale Tech, as they call it.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves, and this time we're exploring the best of Western Ireland. And we're starting about as west as you can get on the Aran Islands, where, as the people here say, the next parish over is Boston, right?
That's right.
Ireland, especially its west, has a unique charm where its rugged natural beauty and its vibrant traditions can be seen and actually felt. We'll delve into the best of the west, not polished and on a museum shelf, but wonderfully raw and unrefined.
After imagining this island's misty past, old as the pyramids, we enjoy plenty of traditional Irish music, from a foot-stomping small-town dance show to local pubs where every night's a music fest. We explore the biggest city of the West Coast, hang from a dramatic cliff, and eat really well. All with my favorite travel partners, my kids, Andy and Jackie.
Well, I don't really have enough time to get into this, but the fort out on Aran Island is called Dun Angus, and like I say, it's just incredibly old. There's all of these old, perhaps not surprisingly, but a lot of old things in Ireland, old places that were either forts or they were areas where they had discovered human settlements and such. So it is like a lot of places in Europe, it's full of history that goes back hundreds or thousands of years, which is kind of different than living in America. But, you know, when you go to an Irish pub, a lot of times, not in the beginning of the evening necessarily, but people will show up with musical instruments and they'll sit there. So a typical thing that you would see is a guitar, of course, a penny whistle, the Irish whistle. Sometimes occasionally bagpipes, but they're not bagpipes. They're called Illan pipes. They're different than bagpipes. And sometimes a fiddle or a little squeeze box, a little tiny concertina, what do you call it? Accordion. And then they'll play and sing, and they'll be kind of at a table and kind of looking at each other playing. And these pubs have these little short seats. And then somebody will stand up. One of the things that happens in an Irish pub, somebody will stand up, usually an older guy, will stand up and make a statement. It's not really a speech, but it's kind of like that. And it's kind of in a sing-song manner, usually about the old days kind of a thing. That's charming, you know. We'll take a break here. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, 805-6180. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
My boyhood friend and my own relations have passed on like the melting. But I spend my days in a tropic, some filter grass, and my bed is green.
So I was talking in the last hour about happy St. Paddy's Day. Talking to you in the last hour about the problems in Venezuela, and we were talking yesterday about how the government, the people in the government, will blame. I'm looking at some texts that have come. Somebody's sending like three or four words per text here. It's a little hard to follow. I'll get to it. So what happened? Why is Venezuela have more oil than anybody else, and then they're living in poverty, and they don't have the most basic food, you know, and they're living. It's basically a prison. Everybody wants out. They shut down the borders. The government blame. This is the problem in a nutshell. Karl Marx and all his friends blamed the wealthy for poverty, right? So the Marxists believe there's one pie. So if you get a bigger piece of pie of wealth, then the person next to you gets a smaller slice, right? So this very simplistic and demonizing, the most demonizing people on the planet, there's got to be a tie between the Ayatollahs and the socialists, the Marxists, who are always viciously attacking other people for not agreeing with their brilliant insights. The government doesn't realize that business people create wealth. In a socialist culture, the wealthy are not celebrated for helping make a better society. Business owners, et cetera, they're seen as jackals, as hyenas that are feeding off the less fortunate. So here's this profound ignorance played out by the Venezuelan government. They have to blame somebody. Venezuela has a bread shortage. This is from the Miami Herald. Now, don't forget that Venezuela is at the top of South America. So it's really, it's almost part of the Caribbean. It's not really that far away from Miami. And there's a lot of Venezuelans in Miami. There's a lot of everything from South America in Miami. Venezuela has a bread shortage. The government has decided bakers are the problem. See? Right? So the government sets it up. So the government thinks that bread's important. So the government would make, instead of bread being $2.50, a dollar, whatever, they would make a law. You can't sell a loaf of bread for more than 25 cents. So what would people do? I'm getting out of the bread business. Why should I lose money on every loaf that I, you know, so all the bread goes away. And then any supply of bread that is not stolen by the military to sell in the black market is taken to the black market and sold there for two or three or five or 10 times what it used to cost. So that's the impact of socialism on an economy. So why do people want socialism in America? Here's from the story. Facing a bread shortage that is spawning massive lines and souring the national mood. I think the national mood was already sour, by the way. The Venezuelan government is responding this week by detaining bakers and seizing establishments. That's the answer, right? The government goes down and owns everything because, you know, if you are lucky enough to get a job in a socialist government everybody's a government worker, then that means you know how to bake bread too. In a press release, the National Superintendent for the Defense of Socioeconomic Rights said it had charged four people and temporarily seized two bakeries as the socialist administration accused bakers of being part of, quote, a broad, quote, economic war aimed at destabilizing the country. In a statement, the government said the bakers had been selling underweight bread and were using price-regulated flour to illegally make specialty items like sweet rolls and croissants. My God. The government said bakeries are only allowed to produce French bread and white loaves, or pan canilla, with government-imported flour. However, in a tweet on Thursday, price control czar William Contreras said only 90% of baked goods had to be price-controlled products. So, what pathetic. Good Lord. I mean, you know, so you have a place that is bordering on the best country in South America, and then you add one thing to destroy it, socialism, the stupidity of Marxism. Isn't that tragic? Venezuela arrests brownie and croissant bakers in bread war. So let me ask you this. Is that going to create more bread for the country? And they've got a picture. They've got a video of people looting a store. They broke into a store. Somebody's filming it on their camera, and people are grabbing everything. Now, would it be illegal, in your opinion, if you're living in a socialist country, would it be wrong or illegal to go in and steal food if the government is you know, so it's one of the great questions. Is it acceptable to go in a country where the law itself, the government itself, is corrupt, has become a predator, has become a prison commandant? Would it be wrong to break into a store to steal food so that your family didn't starve? Just a question. But, you know, how do you decide what a good law is? Now, there's this debate in the church. Some people feel like, according to some of the teachings in Romans and places like that, that no matter what the government is like, that you have to follow its rules. The founding fathers, who were living in a profoundly Christian society more than we could ever imagine, they believe that you could revolt and throw off the tyranny of the leadership that was not following natural law principles. So what do you believe? We'll take a little break here. And I've got for you right here, Davy Spillane. If you're looking for great Illen pipes, and Illen pipes are spelled U-I-L-L-E-A-N-N. This is the Irish bagpipe. It's not blown. There's not a pipe that you blow through. There's a bag under your arm that you squeeze, and they say it takes 10 years to learn and another 10 years to master the Uilleann pipes. And Davy Spillane is the most famous Irish Uilleann pipe player. But it's got a haunting sound. 714 AM Las Cruces, same 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. We'll be back. So 718, let's go over some more headlines. Turkish newspaper depicting Angela Merkel as Frau Hitler on the front page. There's a story that is being disputed that Sean Hannity pulled a gun on Juan Williams after an argument. Juan Williams is saying that never happened. Diplomacy with North Korea failing. Military action on the table, preemptive strike. Sirens blaring in Japan as they hold their first missile drill. And the North Koreans have been building missiles. ISIS hacker who published kill list killed in drone strike. Teacher quits after Islamic students threatened to behead her. That's the great issue. The great issue in Islam is whether there is a... whether the radical Muslims are really just a tiny segment that don't represent the whole, or whether Islam in general supports jihad. And in the history of Islam, Islam has supported jihad, so why would it be any different now? Erdogan threatening to send Europe 15,000 refugees a month, which would, I assume, be Muslims. 1,200 Marines ID'd in nude photo ring. Ralph Nader hitting Google, Facebook, Apple monopoly with antitrust lawsuits. And Dallas is scrambling to fix 9/11 delays in wake of two avoidable deaths. There's a picture of a guy bending over on a green on a grass next to water. PGA golfer casually removes gator from course. An exorcist failing to drive out evil spirits from Brazilian presidential palace. Brazil is in its own chaos, and the chaos in Brazil has to do with the failure of the left government, and then the old president left in high regard, and now his follow-up candidate was removed, impeached. So now there's a lot of chaos in Brazil. A little more on socialism right here from March 14th, Fox. To understand socialism, you have to study Venezuela, I argue.
Mommy Horowitz. Democrats and the Democratic Party have moved decisively to the left. How far to the left, you may ask? What's wrong with socialism?
Nothing.
What's wrong with socialism?
Nothing.
Nothing. What's wrong with socialism?
I don't have anything. I don't have any problems with it.
I don't think anything's wrong with socialism.
Capitalist countries have always been messing with this ideology and trying to delegitimize it.
I kind of like it. I think the American people like socialism. I think socialism's great.
All right, this guy, Ami Horowitz, is walking next to a guy holding a big stick in Caracas, Venezuela, and the guy's face is blotted out, but this Horowitz guy is asking him what he's doing.
This is a pretty dangerous part of town. What are we doing here? buscando algo que comer.
I'm looking. I'm looking for something to eat.
What kind of food?
What kind of food? Anything, whatever I can find.
Sea lo que encuentre. Perro, un gato, una paloma. Tengo mucha hambre.
A cat, a dog, a pigeon. I'm very hungry. The average Venezuelan has lost 14 pounds in the last few months, in the last year.
Tengo mucha hambre.
Says I'm really hungry.
Venezuela, a democratic socialist state with the world's largest oil reserves, has descended into a mind-boggling Malthusian chaos. The country has been engulfed in violence, hunger, and corruption, and is on the edge of total societal collapse. Venezuela's socialist experimentation has decimated the middle class, and most people in Caracas live in the extremely dangerous barrios of the city. These barrios are massive, crudely built, claustrophobic cities within cities. We're here, one of the biggest barrios in Caracas, to get a sense of how the situation is affecting the poor people here. It's a very dangerous place. We made a deal from the barrio bosses, so we should be safe.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Are there times where you're just hungry? Your family is hungry?
Sí, ya yo he pasado hambre, mi familia también.
Muchísima hambre, incluso a veces me dan tembladera, con sueño, hambre.
Mayormente pasamos hambre porque no conseguimos la comida, no conseguimos la.
These people are all saying that they're starving. They can't find food for their families. They can't find milk for the babies.
Leche, cereal, el alimento, el azúcar, nada de esas cuestiones. Por eso mayormente pasa.
Yo estoy parada y de repente me desmayo porque no he comido.
People saying they're passing out because there's nothing to eat.
So scarce that people have to wait in lines, very long lines, in order to get enough to survive, just barely.
What time did you go to wait in line?
Estuve desde ayer en la madrugada haciendo la cola desde las 2 y conseguí esto, leche.
I don't know if this is coming across, but basically, people are saying they wait all day for food in line for hours and hours, and there's nothing to eat. So let me ask you this. You know, like Nancy Pelosi got up yesterday and she said, or a couple of days ago, if you have one drop of compassion in your heart, get rid of this new attempt to throw out Obamacare. Obamacare is failing because it's built on socialist principles. And if this idiot buffoon, failed politician had any compassion for people, why did she bring this law in the first place and then lie about it repeatedly and then say that we're going to have to parachute in, we're going to have to march through the gates, we're going to jump over the fence, we're going to pole vault, actually, we'll go through the gates. If the gates are closed, we're going to pole vault over. If we can't pole vault over, we're going to parachute in, but we're going to bring health care reform to the United States people. There is no fundamental difference between the destruction that they have brought to American health care than what is going on in Venezuela right now, because they're the same principles that are deforming and destroying the marketplace. And this lady has the temerity, she has the gall to stand up and lecture other people about human compassion when they have attacked and deformed the health market here so bad that it can't be easily fixed. And then they're blaming it on Donald Trump, who just showed up. Take a break here. All right, here's another song. She Moved Through the Fair, another classic Irish folk song.
Thank you.
So a federal judge in Hawaii decided for the United States that Donald Trump's health is travel ban is illegal. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, good morning, Kelly. You're just touching the subject I'm calling about. I don't understand why, since the lower courts were actually installed, they're not part of the Constitution. They were put in there by Congress. Why can't Congress limit the types of cases they can hear? I mean, having all of these small courts hear something that has influence or great impact on the Constitution, it's kind of like having the CEO of a company make a business decision and have every labor union operative down the road making a decision that changes the course of the company.
Well, yeah,
you got to be answering to the board of directors.
Who is this? By who? I recognize your voice, but I'm trying to put a name on it.
It's Bob.
Bob, yeah. So anyway, all right. So I think what we're dealing with is a much larger issue here. Is that Donald Trump is coming in and he's challenging the status quo and everything. Some of his decisions will be wiser than others, but he is challenging the basic structure of how we decision make and everything. And I think that there's been a corruption that's been brought in through Obama. Obama is a symbol of this far leftism is coming across and taking away the rule of law and putting in its place sentimentality and feelings. And, you know, Trump is challenging this. And so what does this guy in Hawaii get up and does? He challenges the intention, not the legal right, not the legal standing of Trump to be able to make the decision. The Hawaiian judge challenged his intentions, which, you know, I mean, that's outside of the law. I mean, how are you going to judge somebody's intentions?
Well, that's true. But why are these lower court judges even hearing a case that has implications for the Constitution? This should not be in their purview. It should automatically be advanced to the upper court. That's the constitutional court. They're not a constitutional court.
But I mean, I think what's going on here is a much bigger danger. You can talk about this and the mistake the Hawaiian judge made, and it makes any of these federal judges a national judge who can make decisions on what happens across the United States in a way that the founders never conceived of. But I think we've got a bigger problem on our hands is we're losing the idea of the rule of law, and what is taking its place is belief or feelings or sentimentality, which these people are bringing out. All of these people that are attacking Trump are going off the knowledge that he's a future Hitler, and so they have the right to say or do anything against him that they want, and so much of it is just totally unsubstantiated or, like you say, factually incorrect stuff.
Well, that's true, but I guess what scares me too is that I hear people on our side saying, well, perhaps what he should do is just simply tell that judge, say, oh, you know, that's a very nice ruling you've made. Now let's see you enforce it. And that's the rule of law, and I really don't know that I want to see our side go that way.
I got you. Okay, thanks for the call, Bob. Good points. All right, folks. I mean, what are we going to do? There is something called a sea change, what they call a sea change or a, you know, kind of a revolution or whatever you want to describe it. The issue is that, you know, the United States became great in part because of the rule of law, because we left Europe and we said, we're not going to bow down to kings and queens anymore and get pushed around by royalty. we're going to set up a country where the law is king, as opposed to the king being law. The famous book Lex Rex by Samuel B. Rutherford is, or Samuel Rutherford, and maybe I'm thinking of Samuel B. Hayes, whatever. The point is that you make a country great by establishing the rule of law. You make the law fair, and then you apply it to everybody. And the problem with, you can hear this from the issue in Venezuela, socialism is based on sentimentality in a very, very perverse and destructive sentimentality. And if all of these socialist leaders claimed, you know, actually love the people like they claim to, when they see that socialism is failing, why do they double down on it? I mean, you can look at Venezuela and compare it to any country in the world and see that it's failing. There's no excuse for it to fail because it has more of an easily extracted, relatively easily extracted substance that could establish economic foundation and stability for the whole country. And you bring in socialism, and what does socialism do? It attacks the very ability of human beings to decision make in their lives. It attacks the right and the opportunity for people to come up with an idea for what they want to do for a living and then execute it and then go out and do it. It attacks people's ability to care for themselves and their family. And so the oldest right probably in the history of Europe, the oldest right that we know about is the right for self-defense. There should be a right of economic self-defense because it's related to your survival, where everybody has the right to practice a legal profession of their choosing. And they have the right to open a business and practice buying and selling, which you can call capitalism. But, you know, throw away these labels and think about the most basic things. You've got these inane people who are constantly meddling. They've got it here in this county where these far lefties have this vision for the future, and they put this UDC, whatever its acronym is, this plan together that limits the economic potential in the future. And I mean, these people are meddlers. They don't understand economic basic. You can't change, in the same way you can't change the law of gravity by going and putting in a new statute, you can't change the laws of economics. And when you try to do that, you create suffering and chaos on an unimaginable scale. As you see in Venezuela, everybody suffers. There will eventually be a revolution there where they have to throw this garbage out, but take a break here. We'll be right back. 523-1450, call in 805-6180 to text.
My young love said to me, my mother wants mine, and my father won't slight you for your lack of kind. And she stepped away from me, and this she did say, it will not be long, love, till our wedding day.
All right, so why can't we teach kids about capitalism in school in an effective way so that kids are not growing up being sympathetic to socialism? And the reason that I say that, I think it is instrumental to the growth and the safety of the republic, because republicanism, which is basically our form of government anyway, constitutional democratic republicanism, let's take it piece by piece. The Constitution the rule above rules, the law above laws. So the Constitution is a collection of fundamental rules that cannot be broached or broken, breached. And that's the foundation. That's the rule of application of the rule of law. And then you've got the democratic theory, which is one person, one vote. Add to that the really most important part of it, which is republicanism, which is the diffusion of power in a society or a state through institutions. And so what are the institutions we're talking about? We're talking about the presidency. We're talking about the bicameral, the two-sided legislature, Senate and House. And we're talking about a judiciary that is independent but not all-powerful. And we've seen the judiciary becoming more and more all-powerful. But in any event, you've got all of this stuff to diffuse power to protect people. Well, socialism as an economic theory cannot protect people because it doesn't allow freedom. We've got another phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna. What's going on? Happy St. Patty's Day.
Oh, thank you. And yesterday was my birthday, so yesterday was happy birthday.
Doubling up there. Well, what's on your mind?
Well, we have to define capital. Capital is the means of production. If that's the case, then capitalism and socialism and communism are all capitalist systems. But the key is who controls the capital. In a fascist system, most of the businesses were owned by the separate people, the individuals, but the fascist government controlled the capital.
Right.
They controlled the means of production. They said how much you could make, what instruments you could have, and everything. But in communism, it was true capitalism all the way, because the communist government not only controlled, but owned all the capital,
okay,
including the tractors and everything, to produce what is useful.
All right. So get to your point.
My point is that capital is the means of production, and all governmental systems operate under a certain form of controlling or not controlling the means of production, which is capitalism.
All right. Anything else? So anyway, you've got to you have to understand that socialism, just look at all the socialist countries for proof of this. Human rights go out the window. Legal rights go out the window. Why? Because the government is trying to control everything so that it can create justice, right? That's the theory. And so we believe in this country, and it has been proven in practice, that giving people liberty to conduct their own affairs is a much safer way to create justice than the government coming down and making all kinds of decisions. But socialism, because it takes away people's rights, is very dangerous. It doesn't create wealth, obviously. Find me a wealthy socialist nation. It doesn't, therefore, create equality, except equality in suffering and poverty. It is a threat to the democratic process itself, to the republicanism itself, because it is an attack on the vitality of the people, of the freedom, the liberties of the people. So we'll take one more break here. I've got a very famous song. Now, the name of the song is Raglan Road, which was written by the Irish poet Patrick Kavanagh after Raglan Road in Ballsbridge, Dublin. And then it was put to music, and then it became a classic. And it's a very, very Irish song if you listen to the lyrics. 747 flying those friendly skies, AM Las Cruces 523-1450, and 805-6180. I'll get to your text before the end of the show.
On Raglan Road, on an Earl of
day, I saw hers and you. That her dark hair would weave a snare that I might one day rue. I saw the danger, yet I walked along the enchanted way. And I said, let grief be a falling leaf. Catch the dawning of the day.
Just looking at this Hawaiian judge's order, and it's about 30 pages long, and he put together, all right, so here is his analysis. Let me just read you a little bit out of this. Analysis of the temporary restraining order. If a person believes that something, that some decision has been made, in this case by the government, that could grievously harm the rights of others, the court can put in a TRO, temporary restraining order, until the issue can be heard. So it says here, the court, this judge rules, the court turns to whether plaintiffs, the people who brought the lawsuit, established a likelihood of success by their lawsuit. And he says, because a reasonable objective observer, enlightened by the specific historical context, contemporaneous public statement, and specific sequences of events leading to it being issued, would conclude that the executive order was issued with a purpose to disfavor a particular religion in spite of its stated religiously neutral purpose. And then it talks about the Establishment Clause. The clearest command of the Establishment Clause is that one religious denomination cannot be officially preferred over another. Larson v. Valente, which is not technically correct. The original purpose of the Establishment Clause is that a national church, Christian church, would not be established. The executive order's primary purpose, it goes into that. But I mean, basically, he says, he quotes here, only a few weeks ago, the Ninth Circuit commanded otherwise. It is well established that evidence of purpose beyond the face of the challenged law may be considered in evaluating establishment and equal protection clause claims. So we're not even talking about what's legal. We're talking about the intention of something that is legal to make it to decide that it's illegal. So this is, I don't know, this is actually 40 43 pages long, so seeing if there's any takeaways here. But I mean, basically going off of the intention. So, all right. I'm going to remind you of a story that I've mentioned before by Jonathan Chait in the New York Magazine. Can we start taking political correctness now? At the end of the article, and Jonathan Chait is a very well-regarded writer from the liberal tradition. This is just the end of it. When we were listening to these kids screaming in the face of school officials, professors, and proctors, and these guides at Yale had these minority students screaming in their faces, saying that they're not creating a safe place. We see that political correctness turns back on itself and begins to it begins to consume itself. Now, Chait says these activists have been able to prevail even in the face of frequently harsh national publicity, highlighting the blunt illiberalism of their methods, you know, using, in that case, screaming at people to shout them down and take away their free speech. It confirms that these incidents reflect something deeper than a series of one-off episodes. They are carrying out the ideals of a movement that regards the delegitimization of dissent as a first-order goal. Carrying out the ideals of a movement that regards the delegitimization of dissent as a first-order goal. That's the line that I always think about. People on the left need to stop evading questions of political correctness by laughing it off as a college joke or interrogating the motives of the PC critics or ignoring it and make a decision on whether they agree with it. In other words, what are we going to put first? Our Bill of Rights, our freedom of speech, or political correctness? But one of the things that he states in there that I immediately identified with is this idea that if you disagree with people on the left, you have to be shut down. And the idea that's behind that is if you disagree with the left with political correctness, you're wrong. And all they need to do is find the right argument to prove that you're wrong. And I think this is what's being used against Trump right now, is that he's wrong because he is not liberal. He's by definition wrong. Every idea that he has, everything that he has. And so you have this culture that through the national media, through the left politicians and many people on the right, unfortunately, the GOP like John McCain and these celebrities, these writers and actors and stuff, the mainstream media going after Donald Trump as if if he rolls over in bed, he did it the wrong way. You know, if he blinks, so every single thing that he does is wrong. And so they're buying into this idea that it has been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that far leftism, socialism, Marxism, all these various ideas have been proven so far, so deeply, you cannot disagree with them at any level, and if you do, you have to be shut down. Now, outside of the fact that it's false, that leftism, that socialism has been proven to be true, the exact opposite, we want to look at the main issue. We want there to be freedom of speech in this country, and that propaganda, the media, blogosphere, all these different things should not be used to destroy people just because they disagree. Because when we make mistakes in the future, how will we know about it if every single person who criticizes anything that's being currently done is shut down, is demonized, is caused to be fired and driven out of a community? So that's what we're really talking about here. And I think Trump is kind of riding out this wave in kind of fighting with these people and, you know, trying to keep his agenda going forward. But what we're really fighting over is the most basic rights in the Constitution, the right to be able to have free speech and to not be destroyed because we dare to disagree with the powers that be. And don't overlook also the deeply emotional and non-legal sentiments illegal, anti-legal, however you want to describe it, these sentiments, these deep, deep and hateful. And if you want to talk about a return to fascism or some other movement that is driven off of fear and anger and a complete rejection of law, the only thing that matters is your knowledge that someone is wrong. That is what the left is representing here. It's very scary. Anyway, I'll take you out with Raglan Road. Happy St. Patty's Day. It was wonderful to spend time with you today. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Have a good one, and we'll come back in 2 days. Have a great weekend. Ciao.
On grass and street in November, we trip lightly along the ledge of a deep ravine where time we sing the words of passion's pledge. The queen of hearts still making hearts. And I'm not making change. But I love too much by such and such. Yeah, this happiness is thrown away. All right.